Well, thank you, my dear. Okay, so let's see. Craig, you want to call the roll?
Sure. Well, I'm aware of five people on the call, so we'll see. I've got Ken Freeland, Dwayne Dietz, Craig McKee, James Hufford, and Kat McGuire. Is there anyone else?
Okay, this is the National Peace Teleconference for March 25th, 2015. And does anybody have anything to offer by way of amendment of the minutes from the last meeting that was dutifully circulated by Craig very recently? Hearing none, then we'll take those minutes as approved and move on to agenda formation. Does anybody have anything to put into tonight's agenda?
This is Kat, and
yeah.
if there's time, next Wednesday I have a meeting, not with my congressperson, but with their aide, to come in and talk about H.R. 14. And if there's time, I was wondering if people could give me some strategic advice of how I might carry on that discussion. Thank you.
Okay. All right, we'll put that on the agenda. If there's no objection, does anybody else have anything to add or object? Okay, then let's go right into that. Then, since that was a request, let's see if we can offer some sage advice for how to treat a congressional aide with the H.R. 14 issue. Who would like to comment?
Well, this is Dwayne, and I will only just report my interactions with my congressman, who is Daryl Issa, and I have not yet had a meeting with him, but I had sent a letter to him on this subject. Actually, I'd sent a letter on the previous bill that was with the previous House before they changed with the election, and he responded with a letter basically saying he's assigned one of his staff people to look into it, and thank you for my suggestion. And then I sent another letter after the change of the House and the H.R. 14, and he's not responded to this one. So that's my only interaction. I'm trying to decide whether to ask for a meeting with him, and I probably will, but I have no other input.
Well, what I'm not sure about is, should I extend the conversation beyond H.R. 14 or just try to keep it really around H.R. 14?
Yeah, this is Ken. I actually had meant to comment on that particular question. My experience is very limited with congressional aides, but we have had local experience of speaking to a congressional aide about 9/11. And the tendency is to just sort of be dismissive, okay? And I think you're going to find that a pretty knee-jerk reaction if you try to go there. I would strongly urge you to just focus on the right to know issue and avoid the question of 9/11. As much as you can, you know. And if they ask you leading questions about it, just say, well, I'm keeping an open mind on that, you know. But I just really like to see this information because I think as citizens we have a right to it, and it really irks me that Congress thinks that we are too small to be able to handle the real information, you know, and so forth. I think you get farther that way personally, but I'd like to hear what others think, too.
Well, that sounds reasonable, especially since I suppose they are prompted to give short shrift to kooks like us. But on the other hand, when delegation from our group met with several of the staff members of our congressman about 4 years ago, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. They were all ears. They said that what we told them about 9/11 was hard to take in, that it was like trying to drink out of a fire hose. And you know, of course, they promised to pass everything on to the congressman, but then we never heard back anymore. But I think they were themselves, the aides themselves, were astounded at that there was really so much cause for moving forward with more investigation into 9/11. And that was our experience.
Uh-huh. Well, this is Ken again. I think you just have to be clear on what your objective is in having this meeting. If your objective is something other than getting H.R. 14 passed, then I guess you'd have to really consider whether you want to get into that larger conversation. But you, I think you just have to carefully weigh how much that other conversation may detract from your ability to get H.R. 14 passed if you
exactly.
avoid it. And that's the key question. And so you really have to bring up the congressman a little bit, or the aide that you're going to be speaking with, and where they're coming from. But if you don't know that, I would be very careful about going into uncharted waters if you have a limited objective.
Well, one objective that you could fulfill in your meeting is making yourself known as someone who's reasonable to talk to, and
mm-hmm.
It'd probably be easier to get your foot in the door again for follow-up, maybe for 9/11 next time, once they realize that they can talk to you and that you're reasonable and so forth. Welcome another meeting.
I'm coming in during the day, and I have a corporate job, so I look really straight and narrow.
Yeah,
and
you bet.
I'm pretty personable. I you know, I can look you in the eye and speak at the same time. So I think that's very good advice. Stay really focused and just appear very businesslike, and be aware that this person, her name's Jackie, might be interested in other things. But say I'd be happy to sort of offline talk about any of that. But let's stay focused on this issue so that we can accomplish.
That's fine. That's a very good approach, I think.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Because one of the people who I do a lot of activism around this with, he was saying, well, bring in your computer and show this video. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. I'm like, am I out of it? I haven't. He's gone. He's visited his before, and I haven't. But it just sounded pretty, quite a stretch to try to tell him to sit down and watch his 9/11 video.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm not crazy.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that seems too much, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might consider once you got the email address of a person, if you have a good rapport with them, maybe following up by sending the James Corbett 5-minute 9/11 video. I don't think that'd be overkill, and it could pique their interest.
Well, I love that one, but it's a little snarky, so I don't think I'd send it.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Well, my personal favorite these days is David Ray Griffin talking about the myths of 9/11.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay. So how would we like to get back into the earlier discussion about the book, since that's we're kind of at our agenda anyway? Anybody want to make further comments about the book? It sounds like you are pretty familiar with it. Yeah?
Well, this is Duane. Let's repeat what I said before we started the meeting officially, and that is that the subject is the book Meticulous
Illusion?
What's the name of the second one? Meticulous.
Methodical.
Illusion.
Oh, Methodical Illusion by Roberta Roth. So I'm speaking from the experience that we've had here at San Diego 9/11 Truth, which we were almost everyone that I talked to was very positive on the book and really felt it provided a lot of new insight. to the airplane situation. But one of the people on the email thread reacted very negatively to the book from the standpoint that it seemed to be promoting the Tea Party agenda. And I'll have to say that particularly at the end of the book, when the president gives his, I can't remember, it was the State of the Union or it was inaugural address, one of those major addresses, had like two or three topics. One had to do with this 9/11 truth, which we all can applaud what he said. But the others, at least one of them, had to do with getting rid of Obamacare, and the third one probably get rid of the IRS or something like that. And very much on the agenda of Tea Partiers and or libertarians. And so when I read it, I didn't think that much about it. I thought, well, the president had to say something, and that happened to be something that was important to him. Didn't pertain to this book, but okay. But so this one person who read it was outraged that someone like this would be a Tea Partier. And so her view was, this is a wolf in sheep's clothing using 9/11 in order to send out her real agenda. Well, that's caused all kinds of debate between people on our email list. So I'll just leave it at that. It was kind of a surprise viewpoint that was thrown in, but it caused a huge reaction.
Mrs. Cat, I'd like to make a comment.
Mm-hmm.
I was turned off very much by all the Tea Party stuff, but I didn't let it get to me. I got past it. Between that and how poorly written it is, and just a stupid novel, or the Reading Affair probably with the president, what I intend to do, how I want to use Rebecca Roth, is not steer a soul to that book, but to steer them to interviews that she's starting to have, the Coast to Coast one, and I'm sure there's going to be others, because I just don't think she's going to get her Tea Party agenda line in there, and I don't think she's a wolf and she's supposed, and there are a lot of 9/11 people, far more on the Tea Party line than on the left, who are giving us 9/11 inspiration and research, and I'm a card-carrying leftist. But I have really had to open my eyes, or not my eyes, my tolerance level, and say, okay, I'm going to ally with people on certain things. But mm-hmm. So that's my strategy, is just point people to her interviews where you're really just getting the airline stuff and you don't have to deal with all the other drawbacks of the book.
Yeah. Let's remember that it's a work of fiction anyway, right? So, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on what you just said, because I'm a card-carrying leftist too, but I would say this. I've listened to Alec Jones enough to know he's always maintained the initial Tea Party, the original Tea Party, was actually a pro 9/11 truth movement, okay? So we have to bear that in mind when we look at the Tea Party. It's become something a bit different from what it started out being, or at least it's gone through some morphing, okay? But it was initially very much oriented around some things around 9/11 truth. Hmm. So it's not that atypical in its way. You know, I mean, people approach it from different political perspectives. Antiwar.com would be another good example, I think. We're certainly not going to get very far if we politically confine what people, you know, can hold in their other political opinions with respect to 9/11
yeah.
truth.
Yeah, I absolutely believe. I absolutely agree. If we factionalize, why we're done. We're nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's Craig. Has anyone heard enough interviews with her to know what it is like? What are the details of what she is bringing to light in terms of the departure from normal protocols with the planes and all that? I mean, is it something that's really applicable to our studying of 9/11?
Well, if
she's taking 9/11
as
her
overall view of the planes from the viewpoint of a cabin attendant, and what went on with them is that the planes had to have basically, in the middle of their climb out, suddenly descended and landed. And they all landed at the same airport. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a military airport. And that they basically did that, all four planes, within about a 20-minute period. So it has to do with where the planes were at the time that the first anomaly occurred, and where they were in the sky, and their timing. She really researched that really well, and found that that was one common airport that they all would make sense if they landed before there were any phone calls, so that the phone calls were when they were on the ground. That's her overall premise, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, very.
Well, the fact that you couldn't make cell phone calls certainly would point to something like that.
Well, I mean, that's very interesting because most of the 9/11 truth people have severely criticized the whole cell phone concept because they couldn't be done at altitude. And basically, her answer is, "Yeah, they were cell phones, but the planes weren't at altitude. They all had landed." And so, to me, that's a very interesting new view of the whole subject of the airplanes.
Mm-hmm. It really fits with the plan for Operation Northwoods. One of the parts of that plan, which was to create all sorts of chaos that would then be blamed on Castro to justify an invasion of Cuba back in 62, I think. One of the parts of that plan was that they were going to have a passenger airliner, well, or what would appear to be a passenger airliner, take off, headed for, I'm not sure, the Bahamas or something, and it would do exactly what we're talking about here. It would land at a nearby military base, then a remote-controlled sort of drone of the same type of airplane would take off and assume that route, and then once it got out over the water, it would be blown out of the air, and the world would think that a passenger airliner had been shot down by the Cubans. So it's interesting that what she's suggesting sounds like they just dusted off that old plan and tried to use it.
Yeah.
She doesn't get into that aspect of it. She's only focused on those four airplanes and what must have happened on them. And one key thing is that none of the cabin attendants who were sitting in the back, suddenly they couldn't communicate with the cockpit. So normally they would call the cockpit to find out what's going on, and there was no communications whatsoever with the cockpits. And her guess is that basically the cockpits were taken over by a ground-based remote control that basically locked out the cockpit from any communication whatsoever,
Yeah, the history of that is that I don't know how long before 2001, But some commercial airlines installed this software that people were people in the airline industry, a lot of them were up in arms about and didn't want, and that is called termination flight something, where on the ground they can take total control, like a drone, of the airline. And so the pilots, of course, they didn't think anything was wrong because they didn't know that they had been taken control of. But the other thing that she adds in her book is she talks about PTEC. And I don't know if everyone knows about PTEC and Indira Sen and how she was the whistleblower for that. But PTEC is basically backdoor software. And everybody from the White House to the FAA, I mean, everybody has this software, remarkably, and it's all backdoor stuff where you could take over anything. And so it wasn't just drone taking over the airplane. It was using this sinister software that I believe still exists in the FBI software, everywhere. It's backdoor technology to take
sure,
over.
Sure, I think that's how they flew the plane to Diego Garcia, the Malaysian plane.
I'm sure.
This is Ken. Yeah. I'd like to ask Dwayne a question. How do they know, how does she claim to know that the stewardesses weren't able to talk to the cabin? How is that
well,
knowable?
Well, it was knowable that they did not, they weren't able, they tried and were able to communicate with the cockpit. And her view is that would be the first thing they would do. Just being a cabin attendant in the back of the airplane, when suddenly things were not the normal routine. They weren't continuing to climb up to altitude where they could, where the cabin attendants could start their routine, which is to serve meals and whatnot. So all of that suddenly was not happening. And so the cabin attendants, their first action would have been to
call the
crew. But things went through. Yeah.
Can you hear me, Dwayne? How does she know that they didn't? How does she know that they did not?
I think that they basically, that was part of their message. They called their supervisor or whatever it is back at the at their airline.
I got it. Okay, thank you. That, so in other words, it was some cell phone call information. Okay. Then I had a question for, I want to make a comment on what Craig was saying. I'm familiar with those details, too, of Operation Northwoods, but I have to say that I found it absolutely fascinating that as long ago as 1962, they were proposing a plan to use drone-piloted airplanes. Does anybody think that that's kind of interesting? I mean, how could that be the case when that technology supposedly wasn't even developed until relatively recently?
Well, actually, I'll just speak up. Drone airplanes was used way back then, but not for taking over an airplane that's already got a crew on board. The drones at that time, like for target practice, so they'd fly drones and then use them so that. For training purposes, so piloted aircraft could shoot at them and things like that. So that was way back in the 60s.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate that. Okay.
But
anybody else?
It also can, if we're talking about Operation Northwood, that would not involve a plane that was being taken over or a plane that was being piloted. It would be a plane that was taking off. It would be a drone that was taking off with nobody on it.
Right.
So,
right.
So you know, it's not. It wasn't a question of needing the technology to be able to take control of the plane that's flying.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anybody else?
Let me just bring up a recent thing that architects and engineers put out. Richard Gates in Pennsylvania. And there were several talks that were in the vicinity of Shanksville. And so one article that I just read today was by someone there that said that
that site, that venue, is of course of more interest that in that community. And even though Richard was there talking about Twin Towers, the people in the audience were more interested in what happened in Hanksville. But as they were talking in the article about what might have happened in Shanksville, they immediately came back to this new viewpoint, which basically said there wouldn't have been an airplane with passengers on board anyway. Flight 93 wouldn't have been there. It would have already landed at this airport we talked about it, for the Roth's scenario is a reasonable one. That's all.
Any other thoughts? Anybody?
Well, this is Pat again. One of the things that everyone seems to ask on the podcast is, so where did those people in the planes go? What happened to them? I'm sure they were probably assassinated. I don't know. All we can all do at this point is theorize. But the one that I find interesting is Barbara Olson, because it was almost solely on her that we found out about the Pentagon. And so she supposedly had the call with her husband, who happened to be the Solicitor General. That one was a very damning call. At first it was like from the cell phone, and then, oh, no, it was on the back seat phone. So, and nobody's going back and saying about that one, because that was the key pivotal one that said, oh, they're the hijackers. It was Barbara Olson's call. So where's Barbara Olson? And this is like internet rumor sort of thing, but I remember reading at some point Ted Olson remarried, and there was speculation that the woman he married with a little plastic surgery looked awfully lot like Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I would recommend the book by Dean Hartwell, Planes with No Passengers.
Yeah.
Have any of you read that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in that book, I think it's in that book, maybe one of the other ones he's written, he kind of goes through a possibility of how they recruited passengers. And one that I remember is basically they looked for people that maybe were having an affair outside marriage and gave them an opportunity to start a new life. Their romantic part by being some of the passengers. Huh. And so they basically put in a witness protection program. But they knew that the people would find that very alluring as a thing to do for a life with their romantic partner rather than the family. Maybe not all I'm pleased with.
It's worth noting in that regard that the one plane seemed to have quite a number of people on it that were involved with some of the planning for, was it PTEC or systems, something in the Pentagon? I can't remember, but there was a definite connection of one of the passenger lists with people that were involved in something that eventually had to do with 9/11.
Yeah, probably CIC or something like that. So. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't planning. Somebody on one of the flights connected to a company that specializes in drone software?
Yeah, I think that was it. I think that was it. Yeah.
But a lot of them were also, I believe, they were. I think in the case of Flight 77, I think a lot of them were either. There were people that had connections to the Pentagon or arms manufacturers or high technology companies. So they had, there was a sort of a disproportionate number of insiders and also an extremely small number of passengers overall.
Well, the fact that there were so few passengers on the abnormally few passengers on any of the airliners, supposedly, is that's an aspect of the mystery that Rebecca Roth, to my knowledge, didn't deal with. I mean, that is a question in itself. Why on that particular day would there be such a small number of passengers on those planes?
Right.
I don't think she said anything about that, but makes you wonder.
Yeah, indeed.
Anybody else have any thoughts on Roth and the book?
Just one quick comment, actually, about the Barbara Olson again. I believe the call, the Olson call, which turned out to be 0 seconds, at least in the that's in the what the FBI said in the Massawi trial, that there was one, instead of two calls, it was one call, and it lasted 0 seconds. So that call, if I'm not mistaken, is also responsible entirely for this notion that the hijackers use box cutters to take over the plane. So everybody uses that. They say, they're supposed to have done it with box cutters. But in fact, we don't have any evidence for box cutters because the only call that said that was that one call, and it didn't take place.
Yes, and if those calls were done on the ground, there's no particular reason why a call should have lasted 0 seconds if it was from the ground.
Right. That
makes much sense.
Although if this whole thing is sort of staged, then who knows why it lasted 0 seconds?
Exactly.
Well, in fairness to Roth's theory, we could say that call actually did take place, and it did take place on the ground. But then when it turned out that it couldn't have, they were faced with a dilemma, so they just decided to disregard it and go with the 0 second one.
It could be. It's funny that they wouldn't anticipate that issue, though, because...
But that would have cut out so much of their narrative, you know, of the hijackers. Isn't Barbara Olson's call also the source of the description of the hijackers as being Middle Eastern?
James, think about this for a second. Does the fact that several of the hijackers that are still alleged to have done this turned up alive somewhere else, did that ever stop anybody from talking about the 19 hijackers?
It didn't seem to, did it?
No.
No.
Actually, I just put out an article this week all about the hijackers and the fact that you, quoting among other sources, but one of them being Elias Davidson's book, which we talked about on our call few months back, but just basically saying that there's no proof that any hijackers boarded any plane. And Elias makes that case very strongly.
Exactly.
And
Well, David Ray Griffin said that verbatim several years ago in one of his books.
Yeah, I think he said it. I think it was in 9/11 Commission Omissions and Distortions.
I think it was in Debunking. 9/11 debunking.
9/11 debunking? Maybe both.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
Yeah, maybe both.
But Davidson seemed to, he went into it in a lot more detail, I think. I think he did follow it up. And also the other one that's really interesting in that regard is Jay Kolar's chapter in The Hidden History of 9/11 that Paul Zaremka edited. Jay Kolar's chapter is very interesting because there's the story of the hijackers is so much more complex than most people know. And I wrote an article that was 4,000 words, and I just scratched the surface of all the anomalies and the fact that there were doubles used and different hijackers appearing in different countries at the same time. And it's well worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
Kolar's thing, I mean.
Okay, well, I think we've probably run this subject as far as we can take it, so thanks for bringing that to our attention. Any other new books, movies, media that we could talk about? Or Can we move on to other issues?
This is Kat. I do want to mention another book, and darn it, I cannot remember the title. I'd have to go look on my computer, and I can't even remember the author's name. It's a woman, and it's also a fiction book, and I think it kind of takes place around Connecticut. I'd have to, but the reason I'm bringing it up is because I agree with so much of what she's saying, but I was really appalled by the delivery because basically she has to leave New York because of 9/11. She goes up to rural Connecticut or something. And so all of these people, none of them eat organic. They're all obese, overweight. You know, mid-America, it's typical America. But the level of vituperative criticism that her commentary about basically mass America, which I totally agree with, but to present that in a book where we're trying to bring people in, I was like, I don't want to have anything to do with this book, no matter how true to 9/11 it is, because it is just so defamatory to us. It looks like, yeah, you truthers, you're so high and mighty. What is this woman's name? I'm sorry, I'm forgetting it. I will look it up in email. I just want to say, activists beware, buyer beware, activists beware, that some of these people put this stuff out, and it's like, who is your audience? We're trying to get people in, not tell them you're fat and stupid.
Yeah.
What you're trying to tell them.
I recently came across a book that is, it's actually from 2006, but I'd never heard of it, and it's fascinating. It's by a psychoanalyst named Walter A. Davis, and the title of the book is Death's Dream Kingdom, The American Psyche Since 9/11. And it's a good read. It goes deeply into the reaction of Americans in general to 9/11. So I highly recommend it.
What was the name of it again?
Death's Dream Kingdom, The American Psyche Since 9/11 by Walter A. Davis.
And what was the one about the hidden history?
Paul Zaremka, yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Hidden History of 9/11.
Uh-huh.
And he writes 9/11 with a dash in that title. It's edited by Paul Zaremka, who's on our call some of the time. And it has different essays from it's like an anthology of articles. And it's got one from David Ray Griffin in there, the one I mentioned, the J. Cole art one. And actually, I've got it right beside me. It goes into different. It's got one from, what's his name, Ahmed, very famous sort of, anyway, it doesn't matter, I guess.
I know who you mean.
Different people, David McGregor, Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed, he's quite, he writes a lot of essays and stuff. Anyway, it's Kevin Ryan's got a piece in there, too.
What was the Kolar essay about again? I can't remember.
It's all about the hijackers and the identities of the hijackers.
Right.
And about the fact that, well, not only were a bunch of them alive after 9/11, but there's just so many anomalies with them. Things that just don't add up, and there's no way to put any of those people on any of the planes. But he goes into enormous detail about who they were and the whole thing. Very interesting.
There was a third one, American Psyche, and then the Hidden History of 9/11. What was there was another one that you, the Planes with No Passengers.
Mm-hmm.
By who?
Dean Hartwell.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, I have this, the name of the book that is a dumb name. No wonder I didn't remember it. It's called Locus Amenus, A-M-O-E-N-U-S, and it's written by Victoria Alexander. And I think she has a sophisticated consciousness, but she just can't get her judgmentalism out of the way, and it totally ruined the book for me. So beware of that one.
Okay. Does anybody maybe you have an update on HR 14 campaign for us? What's going on right now with that? Where it's at?
I don't know. Actually, in about 5 minutes, I'm plugging into my group who is dealing with that. So I don't know where the latest is right now.
Okay.
I work with 9/11 Truth Outreach, and it's not everybody who's in the group. It's a national call, but our main project right now is that, even though we're doing other side things as well. Actually, I'm working with two of the members, and there's something called the Left Forum every year in New York, the last weekend in May, and we're going to be presenting two panels. One of them is called Islamophobia, and two people already presented that last year, so they're just repeating it again. But we are looking at a new one, either David Ray Griffin, the video about the myths, or Peter Dale Scott is interested in doing a live video feed. So we're considering that. But so that's what I'm working on myself right now.
Okay. Well, how about, is anybody keeping up with what's going on with the 9/11 consensus panel lately? Anybody have any update on that?
Well, before we talk about that, we should talk about Neil Terrett's court case, appellate level, which I think went, as far as I can tell, went really well with one exception. In that one of the witnesses was a colleague of his at the university that, and as I read it, this colleague basically didn't seem to know how to answer the question of what he thought into Building 7. It's like when he actually got into court, maybe he felt uneasy about answering. That was the way that what happened. But everything else seemed to go really well.
Yeah, I heard it's been a lot of publicity in Denmark, so that's, yeah.
The decision is supposed to be April the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It'll be a big day.
There's also something going on in, it's a case against BBC.
Mm-hmm.
Have anyone been following that?
Did you say BBC?
BBC. The article I read is written by Peter Drew, who's in the UK, and he was, let's say, instrumental in the earlier case against the BBC, where someone they protested paying his BBC taxes, because people have to pay taxes, a share of their taxes goes to the BBC, and so he protested paying that. He actually won his case. But that was a pretty small, but this is, I think, a bigger deal, because the person who is the plaintiff is basically saying the BBC is a terrorist organization by the way that the UK is defined under a new law. Terrorist organizations are organizations that support, enable, or whatever terrorist activities, and so he's saying that BBC knew what was going on 9/11. and held information from the public. One that we all know about is the premature announcement of Building 7 collapse. But the other one was that the BC filtered out the sound of the explosives so that it wouldn't sound like explosives. So they basically, he's claiming they took an active role in suppressing information to the public in support of the terrorists. And so he is, this whoever this person is basically saying he had an obligation to report his knowledge of what the terrorist organization has done, and he doesn't want to be named a terrorist himself with that knowledge, something like that.
And where does that case stand, you know? You know where it stands?
I don't know where it stands calendar-wise. I just know that they're trying to do it. So you check that out. It's the article that Architect and Engineers have on the website by Peter Drew.
Great.
I have to go, guys. Talk to you next month.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Kat.
Just join us too? Did somebody just join the call?
Yeah, Barton Bruce, I just joined you. Is this conference ending or starting? Because there was some confusion because you say Eastern Standard Time, but we're in Eastern Daylight Time, so it's a little bit iffy which time.
I emailed you back on that to clarify.
Okay, I didn't get it in time because I've been away from the computer a lot of the day.
It's always at 8 o'clock, regardless of whether it's EDT or EST. O'clock.
Okay, so I missed it, and then maybe a couple of other people, because I just left a Boston 9/11 Truth Conference who scurried out to maybe try to get on it too, but they're going to miss it too. It's okay.
Well, that's right. We're just basically at this point discussing. We've mostly been having discussions tonight, but you can always hear the audio.
Right, afterwards. I know you can hear it afterwards, but.
So, we're looking now for a new topic to discuss. Any other suggestions of things that we need to be updated on? Again, does anybody know anything about what the 9/11 consensus panel is up to these days? Anybody heard anything?
We don't have any new items to deliberate on quite yet. The typical schedule is to come out with new points on the 9/11 anniversary.
Oh, okay.
So the 3 months or so before that, we start deliberating on things.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, any other updates on anything anybody can suggest or anything anybody will
discuss? Has anybody been talking about the 6 flag rank officers who've been booted out of the military in the last very recent time because they wouldn't fire nukes into Ukraine or Russia?
No.
If you go to start page and look at, I don't know what the best wording is, but there's a whole lot of sites, including Rand Paul, but all kinds of other sort of activist sites, all saying almost exactly the same thing. And it's not just today; it's the last 6 to 5, 4, you know, whatever, a whole lot of days. It's really serious, potentially, but who knows?
What key terms would you suggest on start page?
Flag rank officers, you know, booted out or whatever for refusing to nuke. Russia, maybe?
Sure. Well, this isn't the first purge, is it?
I had it on my screen, but the computer seemed to have nicely rebooted itself, and I hadn't saved it before I left. But
definitely worth looking into.
It was in a lot of sites. There's all kinds of, you know, sort of the obvious sites, but it had, you know, things like the Rand Pauls of the Before It's News and all kinds of other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
there's another thing going on. A number of people who are experts in Russian, in Russia, academics, are complaining because the administration is not conferring with any of them, basically going on their own. And that's become very worrisome.
Indeed, it might. Did anybody talk about, people know about Wayne Coste having left Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, right?
Right.
And he's got his own group going in Connecticut. And, you know, Carl Seeger Henry and others who are down there with him have, who are performers or singers, have written their own 9/11 centric songs in various genres, which they put together a whole video now, which may actually get people who won't listen to people who are just truthers talking about it, but you know, you listen to someone singing about all the little inconsistencies about 9/11, and then maybe it'll grab some other people who can't be grabbed any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And Hamook's got a new Henry Boland video that was done this month that is now out, where Christopher Boland is really focusing on the names of prominent Zionists here, and that their dads were, you know, like major, you know, Israeli-based terrorists, well, Israeli-based war heroes in the old days, but now terrorists to anybody else in the world looking at it, naming names and putting the whole list together. And if people remember the NatSummit.org, NationalSummit.org, which had four 501c3s, 501c4s in the annual ass-licking contest, you know, APAC week last year, on March 7th, the Nat Summit had it. That 24, you know, speakers, all subject matter experts, had multiple ex-CIA people, you know, Phil Giraldi and Ray McGovern, and the guy who was the president of the USS Liberty Survivor Association, who was also CIA after that, and Cynthia McKinney and all kinds of other people speaking. Well, this year they've got a few less speakers and only two of the groups. The two groups that had Alison Weir involved, which was CNI Online and Phil Giraldi too, but CNI Online and If Americans Knew is not doing it, but the WRMEA and whatever the other one, Grant Smith, is, are doing it at the National Press Club, but it is April 10th at, from 8 to 5 in the morning in the big ballroom on the 13th floor. And it's going to have Miko Peled, no less. People know who Miko is. If you don't, you probably should. And he's got the two books, The General's Son and The Return of the General's Son. His dad was a famous Israeli general who trashed the Palestinians as a younger officer, and later on he realized that this was insane, that we needed a one-state solution there, and he became their friend and helped them and was forgiven and all that. But he was also a member of the Knesset, and he was a professor there. But the other important reason that the family is not called Self-Hating Jews is that Matty Peled, Miko's dad's father, and Miko, obviously, his grandfather, was one of the founders of Israel and signers of the original documents. And so it's a very prestigious family, and you can't badmouth them. So Miko Peled is speaking, and if you're from the Boston area, or if you're familiar with Dr. Alice Rothschild, who's very much involved in Jewish Voice for Peace, she's speaking there. So whatever. It'll be interesting April 10th for those going to Washington to see it. And there will be videos afterwards, of course, and everything. But if you go to the natsummit.org site from last year, they point you at each of their YouTube things. But if you know Hamook's 911tv.org section on YouTube or on PEG Media, if you want to download MPEG-2s for your local cable station, he's got an awful lot of that material there. So, whatever. Enough, I'm finished, but.
What about the Chris Boland video? What's the name of that?
Hamook did a Chris Boland video earlier this month. It's similar to all the other ones. Chris Boland's been on this book signing tour, but Hamook did one that Hamook introduces him, but Hamook had the cameras rolling and Hamook edited it, and it's already out. It's on YouTube, and he's got it up on PEG Media. But if you go to 911tv.org, which is Hamook's, you know, website, I think it used to be Hamook and Ken Jenkins, but I don't think Ken Jenkins is involved in any way there now.
Hi, this is Bill Wills. I just joined.
Oh, Bill Spartan, I was wrong. It is the other clock and whatever, and he sent me an email that I didn't see, so sorry. Their meeting is winding down now, but it's still going, so.
Okay.
Well, we're open to any other discussion items that anyone would like to enter in. Bill, you said you wanted to discuss something, right?
Right. I'd sort of, one of those frustrated folks looking for things like, rather than the slow course of education, what could we do now? And it occurred to me that we might set up a thing I would call a Smart Aleck. If you know about ALEC, the Koch brothers funded repository of draft state legislation, which people pick up in whole cloth and offer as legislation. This would be, I can't remember what my acronym was for, but this is Smart Aleck, which is meant to be an antidote to the Koch brothers things, where we would have a repository of draft legislation at the federal, state, and local levels. And these would be, templates for various pieces of legislation. I can send you a kind of a tentative list that I came out with, but things like, restore posse comitatus, repeal the Use a Pat Riot Act, Use a Patriot Act, the NDAA, the succession of NDAA, fiscal year legislation federally that always has a couple of little items to strip the people of their civil rights and so on. So, I envision kind of a cooperative effort where we have a repository that people in their regions, neighborhoods, states, cities, town councils, et cetera, would, put in their oar as to what kind of legislation might be of benefit, and that we would provide some background and declarations and supporting information, plus the structure of the legislation itself, so people can kind of trot into their local jurisdictions and proffer this as legislation that should be considered. And that's it.
Thank you, Bill. As a footnote to what Bill is saying here, I sent him a response with a news announcement that there is a bill pending now, I believe, are being introduced into Congress to repeal the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
So that certainly is something we'd like to keep track of and let our local groups be aware of so that we can help support it.
Right.
Okay, any other agenda items, any other items for discussion? Well, I think we should just say thank you all for coming. I'm sorry that some of you were misinformed about the time, but it's always 8 o'clock Eastern time, no matter what the season, so please keep that in reference for the future, and we'll see you all the last Wednesday of April. I'll tell you what though. Let's just take a moment and see whether we can do another productive brainstorm like we did the one time about who we might be able to get on. That would be somebody would attract some interest. And I think maybe Rebecca Roth suggested somebody who's timely and might attract some interest. What do y'all think?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Who was it I was saying they did a long Skype call with her?
James. Yes, my group in Central Iowa, we did the. She was extremely generous with her time. She talked to us for 3 hours. She's a real talker.
Wow.
James, do you think you could approach her about maybe spending a few minutes with us?
Well, I suppose I could, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I still got her email address.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I can do it. Somebody that I would like to talk to if I ever got an opportunity, I don't know if it fits here or not, I'll let you guys judge, but is Michelle Sasudovsky in Montreal at Global Research. He's sort of one of my main sources for my thinking anyway, and on global issues, and I think it would be quite apropos with so many things happening so quickly, so many, to me, fairly obvious false flag and shock events going on, that to hear from him. I don't know how to reach him, but...
Yeah, I would be shocked if he were willing to take the time. I mean, he's...
Yeah, well, you may be right.
But I certainly would agree he would be a stellar guest if we could ever get him on.
Mm-hmm. I have his email address, but if you want to make an attempt.
Well, maybe being a Canadian, you could induce him to consider it. Right?
I'm in the same city, and I've met him in person a few times. Yeah.
All right.
Might not hurt, but
yeah.
Yeah, you can give it a shot, right? Tell him the facilitator is a regular financial supporter of globalresearch.ca. Okay.
I will mention that.
Okay.
I will mention that, yes.
Yeah,
the supporter just wants some of your time. Yeah.
Yeah.
How would you like me to phrase the sort of the topic we'd like him to look at, or just let him choose something, or?
Well, I think probably as James was saying, the false flag question. You know, false flag,
yeah.
in current events, as a overall global strategy, you know.
Yeah. And what he sees as the ultimate source of all of these happenings. You know, where do they really, the emphasis really originate? Is it just with the neocons themselves, or are they down the line somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard him talk a while back on a YouTube piece, I guess, and the thing that caught my attention was that he had said over the, you know, past, oh, I don't know, one score, two, three decades, he had been watching with dismay the criminalization of the United States government.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that would be a good segue also. So perhaps the criminality of the government and the criminalization, I'm sorry, of the government and the use of false flags as a strategy, as a global strategy,
would
be two areas where we would definitely want to hear from him.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, and interestingly, also, he's got a brand new book out, if you didn't know, War and Globalization, that I just got the other day. It's quite a book.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody else was touting that book, too, and I was kind of surprised at who it was. I'm trying to think of who mentioned it. Really flipped me out that they mentioned his book.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of who it was right now, but it was really quite a surprise to me that this person reading Michelle Tosadowski. Oh, anyway, any other thoughts on who somebody else we might contact to enliven the discussion?
Well, not for that, but this is Barton. One last thing is that I mentioned the conference April 10th, but I've got the URL for it. It's Israel, without not Israeli, but Israel and then lobby, or one word, and then US.org. So
okay.
IsraelLobbyUS.org is the new name for what was Nat Summit last year, because it's a different subset of the same nonprofits putting it on.
Right.
And they get a list of speakers and speaker topics and all that online. It's interesting.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, this is Dwayne. I'll just say that the 9/11 Truth Group, a small subsection, had Kevin Barrett on just a Skype session, and it was really great because of the number of topics. We just bounced around from one thing to another, and he had very insightful things to say about everything. So that was quite an experience.
If people are watching him, you should also watch what he writes on Veterans Today, because he's a regular contributor.
Mm-hmm.
VeteransToday.com.
Yeah.
Well, he's Kevin Barrett is on our list of invitees. He's, you know, I think he monitors what we're up to, and anybody that would care to invite him would, you know, he'd certainly be welcome to, you know, comment, turn in a comment, and we could have a discussion with him for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Another one I was just thinking of, in light of the Niels Harrit case, there's a really close associate of Niels who is writing about the case for the AE website. His name is Joseph Angi, and he and Harrit work very closely together. So he might be willing to do that. I don't know if he's in Denmark, of course, so I don't know the old long distance problem coming up again.
That was a big issue last time, wasn't it?
Yeah. I've Skyped with him, but I know that can be an issue. I don't really know how to do Skype conferences, so I would hesitate to.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a thought.
Mhm. Okay. Well, that gives us something to work with. So hopefully, folks will take the time to locate and try to encourage these people to join us. And if you do, just give me a holler, and we'll get the word out.
Great.
Thank you all for your participation tonight, and we'll see you last Wednesday in April.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Bye. Yeah, good night.